He tried to console her by saying it was a crackpot idea in the first place. Mama threw her arms about him and really bawled.
Damien, what could she have meant? Everyone says her predictions come true every time.
Well, not this time.
Vera balled up the wax paper that had held her cake and shoved it into her pocket. I believe Mrs. Alicemore is 100% right. Another freak is about to come into this White Fern house. I can smell it in the air. And with that, she headed toward the foyer, but not quickly enough. In a bounding flash, Papa was on his feet, and she was over his knee. He yanked up her skirt and began to spank her so hard, I could see through her transparent white nylon panties how red her buttocks grew. She screamed and fought him, trying to wiggle free, but in no way could she match his strength.
"Stop it, Damien!"
screamed my mother and my aunt simultaneously.
"That's enough, Damien,"
Mama finished, raising up on one elbow and looking very weak. Ruthlessly, Papa shoved Vera off his lap so that she fell on the floor. She began to crawl away, trying to tug down her skirt and cover her panties.
"How could you, Damien?"
asked my aunt.
"Vera is a young woman, much too old to be spanked. I wouldn't blame her if she never forgives you."
After that, we ate dinner. Everyone was so angry that only Vera and my aunt managed to clean their plates. Later that night, I heard Mama sobbing in Papa's arms, still worried about her unborn baby.
"Damien, something is wrong with this baby. Sometimes it moves constantly, keeping me awake, and other times it doesn't move at all."
"Shh," he comforted softly.
"All babies are different. We're two healthy people. We'll have another healthy baby. That woman has no more divining power than I do."
What could have been a wonderful summer was spoiled because Vera insisted on following me everywhere. Time and again I tried to slip through the woods without Vera knowing, but she seemed to smell my thoughts, and like an Indian, she was on my trail. Though Arden's mother insisted that we call her Billy, this felt strange. When she kept insisting, finally I did. She was the only adult I'd ever met who was ready to share her adult knowledge with me in a way I could understand. I liked it best when I could steal over without Vera, who had a way of dominating all conversations. Every time we visited, we both went away wondering why Billy didn't invite us into her cottage. I was too polite to say anything. Vera was pretending to be mannerly, so she didn't mention it either. One day, I heard Arden tell Billy that Vera was 12. I stared at him, feeling very strange. He knew more about Vera than I did. "Did she tell you that?" I asked.
"Gosh, no,"
he laughed.
"Vera's got nutty ideas about telling her age, but she is listed on the school register, and I happen to know she's 12.
He gave me a shy smile.
"Are you trying to tell me you don't know your own sister's correct age?"
Quickly, I covered. "Of course I do. She says people have long memories, so she's going to pass around so many lies that no one will ever know years from now just what age she was this summer." Despite Vera, I did have fun that summer. It seemed to me that Billy gave me 3 times the warmth she gave Vera, and as shameful as it seemed, she seemed more concerned about my welfare than my own mother did. But Mama wasn't feeling well, and I could forgive her. Dark circles appeared beneath her eyes. She walked with her hands supporting her back. She stopped playing the piano and even stopped reading her paperback romances. Every day she'd fall asleep on the purple chaise with the book on her swollen breasts. I loved her so much I'd stand and watch her sleeping, so afraid for her and the little baby that wasn't a boy or a girl. Vera was telling me all the time it was going to be a neutered baby of no sex, like a doll.
"Nothing between its legs,"
she'd laugh.
"That does happen sometimes. It's a fact. One of the bizarre things that nature can do. It's written about in medical books."
Monthly cramps that kept Vera in bed gave me my best times to run to Arden and Billy. Arden and I ate picnic lunches under the trees, spread on red and white checkered gingham tablecloths. I never felt afraid of him. When finally he did touch me, it was to feel my hair. I didn't mind that.
"When is your birthday?"
he asked one day while I was sprawled on my back, staring up through the tree above, trying to see the clouds and make them into sailing ships. "September the 9th," I answered unhappily. I had an older sister who died exactly 9 years before I was born. She had my very same name. Until I'd said this, Arden had been busy hammering a dent out of some tiny wheel he meant to use on something. He stopped hammering and stared at me in a strange way.
An older sister? With your same name?
Yes. She was found dead in the woods under a golden rain tree, and because of that, I'm never supposed to come here.
But you are here,
he said in a strange voice.
How do you dare to come?
I smiled. I'd dare anything to visit Billy.
To visit my mom? Why, that's very sweet. But what about me?
That's when I turned on my side so he couldn't see my face. Oh, I guess I can put up with you. I turned to peek at him, and he was just sitting there cross-legged in his white shorts, his chest bare and glistening where sunlight hit it.
Well,
he said, picking up the hammer and beginning to beat on that little wheel again.
I guess that tells me you've got a lot of growing up to do, or else it tells me you're quite a lot like your sister after all.
She's not my sister, Arden, but my cousin. My parents only pretend she's theirs to save my aunt from the shame. My aunt went away and came back almost 2 years later. Vera was only 1 year old. My aunt was so sure the father of Vera would take one look at his baby and fall in love with her. It didn't happen that way. While my aunt was gone, he married someone else. Arden didn't say a word. He just smiled to let me know he didn't care who Vera was. Arden loved his mother more than I thought boys ever could. When she called him, he'd jump up to fly into the house. He'd hang up her wash and take it down. He carried out the garbage cans, something my papa would never do. Arden had strong principles about honesty, loyalty, about helping those who needed it, about devotion and dedication to duty, and he had something else he didn't talk about, but I noticed it anyway. He had an aesthetic eye that seemed to appreciate beauty more than most people did. He'd stop in the woods and work for hours to dig up a bit of quartz that looked like a huge pink diamond.
I'm going to have this made into a pendant for the girl I marry someday. I just don't know what form it ought to take. What do you think, Adrina?
I felt envious of that girl he'd marry one day, even as I took the quartz and turned it over. It had many strange convolutions, but in the center were colors so bright and clear it resembled a rose. Why not a rose? Just the blossom, full and open, not a bud.
A rose blossom it will be, then,
he said, tucking the quartz into his pocket.
Someday, when I'm rich, I'm going to give the girl I love everything she's ever dreamed of wanting, and I'm going to do that for my mom, too.
A shadow passed over his face.
The only thing is, money can't buy what my mom wants most.
What's that, if that's not too personal to ask?
It's personal. Very personal.
He grew silent, but that was all right. We could go for hours without speaking, and still we managed to feel comfortable with each other. I lay on the grass watching him repair his bicycle, glancing at his mother in the window as she blended some mixture for a cake, and I thought this was the way real families were supposed to live, without shouting, arguing, fighting all the time. Shadows in the house put shadows in the mind. Out here under the sky and trees, the shadows were only temporary. White fern was permanently, densely shadowed.
Adrina,
Arden said suddenly, still fiddling with the spokes of his bike.
What do you really think of me?
I liked him more than I wanted to admit, but in no way did I want to tell him that. Why would a boy of 12 want to waste his time on a girl of 7? Surely Vera must appeal to him more, but I didn't want to ask this either. You are my first friend, Arden, and I guess I am very grateful you bother with me at all. His eyes met mine briefly, and I saw something glistening in them like tears. Why would he cry because I said that?
I'm going to have to tell you something one day, and you're not going to like me after I do.
Don't ever tell me if that's what it will do, for I don't want to stop liking you, Arden. He turned away then. What did he have to tell me that would make me dislike him? Did Arden, too, have a secret just like everybody else? One early morning I ran to meet Arden so he could teach me how to catch fish and bait the hook with live worms. Vera trailed along behind, though I tried to slip out unseen. I didn't like spearing the worms on the hook, so soon Arden was pulling out his kit of fancy flies and trying to show me how to cast from shore. He stood on a riverbank higher than most to demonstrate the right technique. Seated beside me, Vera leaned to whisper about Arden in his red swimming trunks, giggling and pointing to where all the little babies would come from. "I don't believe one word of what you say," I whispered back, turning red and knowing perfectly well that what she said was true. Why did she make everything about boys seem so vulgar and gross? As much as I disliked Vera, she did have a way of digging up all the facts no one else wanted to talk about. I figured her interest in medical books was teaching her more about life than I'd ever find out on my own.
"I'll bet you and Arden have already played show and tell."
Laughing more, she explained what that meant. I slapped at her for even thinking we'd do that. "I hate you sometimes, Vera."
"Hey, you two,"
called Arden, turning to hold up his catch.
"This is a really big one. A bass, and big enough for all of us. Let's take it to Mom and she'll broil it for our lunch."
"Oh, Arden," exclaimed Vera, clasping her hands together and widening her dark eyes with awe. "I do believe that's the granddaddy fish all the fishing experts around here have been trying to catch for years and years. And to think you caught it. What a wonderful fisherman you are." Usually Vera seemed to annoy Arden, but this time he smiled broadly, flattered by her praise.
"Gosh, Vera, it just jumped on my line."
I hated him for falling for her stupid flattery, for not recognizing that Vera would say anything to make him look at her more than he looked at me. I jumped to my feet and ran to where I'd left my sundress. Behind concealing bushes, I hoped to change from my swimming suit into my clothes. But my clothes were gone, even my sandals. Already my white bathing suit was on the ground, wet and muddy, and I was looking everywhere, thinking my clothes may have been blown away. "Vera, did you hide my clothes?" At that instant, as I looked in another direction, I caught a glimpse of a quick hand that snatched up my discarded bathing suit. I recognized the ring on her finger. Vera's hand. I yelled at her and started to give chase, but Arden was out there and I didn't have on one stitch. "Arden!" I cried. "Stop Vera! She's stolen all my clothes and my bathing suit, too!" Almost crying, I looked around for something I could use to conceal my nudity. I heard Arden thrashing around in the bushes, calling Vera, and then he was coming my way, making plenty of noise.
"Adrina, I can't find Vera. She can't run very fast, so she must be hiding. You can put on my shirt. It's long enough to cover you until you reach home."
Daring to peek, I saw him turn to head for where he'd left his clothes.
"Hey,"
he cried.
"My clothes are gone, too. But it's all right, Adrina. You just stay where you are, and I'll run home and ask Mom to loan you something of hers to wear home."
At that moment, my father came running through the bushes, shoving them aside as he yelled at Arden.
"Where's my daughter?"
He looked wildly around, then riveted his threatening eyes on Arden again.
"All right, young man. Where is Adrina? What have you done to her?"
Shocked into momentary speechlessness, Arden shook his head, unable to say a word. Then, as my father advanced, his huge hands balling into fists, he found his voice.
"Sir, she was here a moment ago. She must be on her way home."
"No,"
growled Papa, knitting his thick brows and scowling.
"I would have passed her on the way if that were true. If she's not home and she's not here, where else can she be? I know she visits you and your mother often. Vera told me that. Now where the hell is Adrina?"
There was an edge of panic in Arden's voice.
"I really don't know, sir."
He leaned over to pick up his catch of fish.
"I was teaching Adrina how to fish. She doesn't like hurting the worms, so I was showing her how to cast with flies. Adrina caught two of these big ones, and Vera caught one. Here's the one I caught."
Papa's back was to me. If I dared, I might be able to sneak away, and perhaps he'd never even see me. Scrunching down, I began to steal away. Suddenly, I was shoved from behind. I screamed as I fell face forward directly into a briar bush. Papa bellowed my name. He came charging my way, thrashing through the heavy underbrush, yelling to find me naked, screaming out his rage as he tore off his expensive summer sports jacket and threw it over my shoulders. Spinning on his heel, he raced back to where Arden stood and seized him by the shoulders. Then, brutally, he began to shake him.
"Stop it, Papa!" I yelled. "Arden hasn't done anything wrong. We were only fishing and wearing bathing suits so we wouldn't ruin our clothes. It was Vera who stole my sundress, and when I had my bathing suit off, she snatched that and ran."
"You took off your bathing suit?"
roared Papa, his face so red he seemed ready to explode.
"Papa!" I screamed, as my father made another menacing move. "Arden hasn't done anything wrong. He's the only friend I've ever had, and now you're punishing him for liking me."
I ran to where I could put myself between Arden and my father. He glared at me and tried to thrust me aside, but I clung to his arms, weighing him down. I was changing clothes behind the bushes. Arden was still fishing. When Vera stole my clothes and even my bathing suit, he offered to give me his shirt to wear, but she'd stolen his clothes too. Just before you arrived, he was going to run home and bring back something his mother would loan me to wear. And now you want to punish him for what Vera did.
Behind me, Arden jumped to his feet.
"If you feel such a need to punish someone, punish Vera. Adrina has never done one thing to make you ashamed of her. It's Vera who plays the dirty tricks. And for all I know, she may have been the one to tell you what we planned to do today, hoping you'd presume the worst."
"And what is the worst?"
asked Papa sarcastically, even as he held me close at his side. His jacket almost slid off my shoulders to the ground. I made a desperate grab to hold it in place. I was trying to hide a bosom that didn't exist. Papa's anger began to simmer down, but only a little. His fingers uncurled, though he kept tight hold on my shoulder.
"Young man, I admire you for trying to protect my daughter, but she's misbehaved just by being here. Vera told me nothing. I haven't seen that wretch since last night at the dinner table. All I had to do was watch my Adrina's eyes this morning. They were shining so much at the breakfast table, I immediately became suspicious."
His smile was charming and evil, too, as he turned to me.
"You see, my love, there are no secrets you can keep from me. I can guess what's going on, even without a tattletale like Vera. And if anyone should know better than to meet secretly with a boy in the woods, it should be you."
Papa grinned, put his hand flat on Arden's chest, and thrust him away.
"As for you, young man, if you want to keep that nice straight nose of yours unbroken, leave my daughter alone."
Arden staggered backward from the hard shove, but he didn't fall. "Goodbye, Arden," I called, tugging on Papa's hand and trying to move him along before he pushed Arden again. Papa chose the most overgrown and difficult paths home, where everything clawed at my face, my legs, and feet. After a while, he let go of my hand in order to protect his own face from being whiplashed by the low branches. I was having great trouble keeping his jacket in place. The neck was so large it kept slipping off my shoulders. When I reached to pull it up on one shoulder, it slipped off the other. The sleeves dragged on the ground, and several times I tripped and fell. Impatiently, he waited for me to stand after the third fall, and then he took the sleeves and wrapped them about my neck like a heavy scarf. Helplessly, I stared up at him, wondering how he could be so mean to me.
"Are you feeling sorry for yourself now, darling? Do you regret your hasty actions, deciding to risk your papa's disfavor to see a boy who will only ruin you in the end? He's only a bit of trash, not worthy of you."
"He's not trashy, Papa," I wailed, already beginning to itch and burn. My feet were full of cuts, my legs scratched. "You don't know Arden."
"You don't know him either,"
he bellowed.
"Now I'm going to show you something."
Again, he seized my hand and pulled me along in a different direction. On and on he dragged me until I gave up trying to resist. Finally, he came to an abrupt halt.
"You see that tree?"
he said, pointing to a splendid one, lush with golden leaves that trembled in the gentle summer breeze.
"That's a golden rain tree."
There was a small mound under the tree covered with clover over which honeybees hovered, hummed, and fingered for nectar.
"That's where we found your older sister, sprawled there, stone-cold dead. Only it was raining that day in September. Raining hard. The sky was dark with thunderclouds and lightning flashed, so at first we thought she might have been struck by lightning. But there was evidence enough to prove it wasn't the work of God."
My heart was a wild, frantic animal in my chest, thudding hard against my ribs, screaming and wanting to get out.
Now you listen to me and listen carefully. Learn from the mistakes of others, Adrina. Learn before it's too late to save yourself. I don't want to find you dead there, too.
The woods were closing in on me, smothering me. The trees wanted me. Wanted me dead because I was another Adrina they wanted to claim for their own. His lesson still not complete, heartlessly Papa dragged me onward. I was crying now, completely defeated, knowing he was right. I should never disobey, not ever. I should never have forgotten the other Adrina. He was leading me to our family plot. I hated this place. I tried to sit down and resist, but Papa picked me up by the waist. Holding me rigid before him like a wooden doll, he stopped in front of the high, slender tombstone that seemed symbolic of a young girl. He said it again as he'd said it 100 or more times in the past, and just as before, his words made my blood chill and my spine turn mushy.
There she lies, my first Adrina, that wonderful, special Adrina who used to look up at me as if I were God. She trusted me, believed in me, and had faith in me. In all my life, I never had another who gave me that kind of unquestioning love. But God chose to take her from me and replace her with you. There must be some meaning in all of this. It's up to you to make her death meaningful. I cannot bear to live with the knowledge that she may have died in vain. Adrina, you have to take on all the gifts of your dead sister, or I'm sure God will be angered, just as I am angered. You don't love me enough to believe I am doing the very best I can to protect you from the very thing that happened to her. And certainly you must have learned from the rocking chair about the boys in the woods on the day she died.
Staring up into his handsome face, which soon streaked with tears, I twisted in his arms so my arms went around his neck and my face tucked down on his shoulder. I'll do anything you want, Papa, as long as you let me see Arden and Billy once in a while. I'll sit in the rocking chair and really try to fill with her gifts. I swear I'll cooperate as I never have before. His strong arms embraced me. I felt his lips in my hair, and later he used his handkerchief to clean my dirty face before he kissed me.
It's a bargain. You can visit that boy and his mother once a week as long as you keep Vera with you and make that boy escort you through the woods, and never go there after dark or on a rainy day.
I didn't dare to ask for more. Competition. The cemetery and the rocking chair had taught me their lessons. From now on, I'd be the kind of girl Papa had to have in order to gain wealth and live happily. I knew he believed his way was the best way, and I couldn't judge for myself the right and wrong of most situations. And I wanted Papa to love me more than that hateful first Adrina that I wished had never been born, just as I'm sure Vera wished that I'd never been born.
"You'll never be as wonderful as your dead sister," stated Vera so firmly that it seemed indeed she must have known her. She was trying to press Papa's shirt to show him she could, but she was only managing to ruin it. The iron kept sticking and left burned places shaped like the iron. Even the steam holes showed. "The first Adrina could iron shirts like an expert," she said, bearing down hard on the iron. And she was so neat with her hair. "Your hair is always a wind-blown mess." Vera's hair wasn't exactly terrific-looking either, the way it fell down into her face in wispy strings. The sun through the window shone through her apricot hair and turned it gold on the ends and red near her scalp. Sun hair. Fire hair.
"I can't understand why they'd name someone as stupid as you are after such a brilliant girl.
You can't do anything right," she went on. "What fools parents can be. Just because you happen to have her coloring, they thought you'd have to have her brains and personality, too. And you aren't nearly as pretty, and you're moody and dreary to be around."
She turned down the heat on the iron, but it was already too late. Worry puckered her brow as she studied the burn marks and tried to figure out what to do. "Mom," she called, "if I burn Papa's shirt, what should I do?"
"Run for the woods,"
called back my aunt, who was glued to her TV set, which was showing an old movie.
"Stupid," Vera said to me. Go ask your mother what can be done to take out the scorched place on Papa's shirt.
I'm too stupid to know what you mean, I said, still stirring my cereal around, sure that Papa would put me in that rocking chair again tonight, as he'd been doing 2 or 3 times a week, hoping the gifts were coming my way.
Poor second-best Adrena, Vera continued. Too dumb to even go to school. Nobody here wants the world to know how idiotic you are with your senile memory. She took from the cabinet a huge bottle of bleach, poured a little onto a sponge, and dabbed at Papa's new pink shirt. The shape of the iron made an unsightly burn right where his coat wouldn't hide it. I went over to see what she was doing. The bleach seemed to be working. Papa stalked into the kitchen, bare-chested, cleanly shaven, his hair styled and ready to go. He paused near the ironing board to stare at Vera, who looked extremely pretty now that she was shaping up and slimming down in her waist. Then he was looking from me to her, then back again. Was he comparing me to her? What did he see that made him look undecided?
"What the devil are you doing to my shirt, Adrena?"
he asked, catching his first glimpse of the ironing board. "She was pressing it for you, Papa," spoke up Vera, moving in closer as if to side with him. "And the silly girl was so busy picking on me, she left the iron flat on your new shirt."
"Oh, my God,"
he cried, grabbing up the shirt and inspecting it closely. He groaned again as he saw something I hadn't noticed until the light shone through it. Holes were appearing in the fading scorch mark.
"Look what you've done,"
he roared at me.
"This shirt is 100% silk. You've just cost me $100.
He saw the huge bottle of bleach and then groaned again.
"You burn my shirt, then pour on bleach? Where was your common sense, girl? Where?"
"Don't get excited," said Vera, running forward and snatching the shirt from his hands. "I'll repair this shirt for you, and you won't know it from new. After all, Adrena doesn't know how to do anything." He glared at me, then turned doubtfully to her.
"How can you repair a shirt that's been eaten by bleach? It's gone, and I had planned to wear that to an important meeting."
He hurled down his wine-colored tie, looked down at his light gray trousers, then started to leave the kitchen. "Papa," I began, "I didn't burn your shirt."
"Don't lie to me,"
he said with disgust.
"I saw you at the ironing board, and the bleach bottle wasn't a foot away. Besides, I don't think Vera would give a damn if my shirt was wrinkled. I naturally presumed you would be the one who knows how much I like to be turned out to perfection."
"I don't know how to press shirts, Papa. As Vera says all the time, I'm too stupid to do anything right." "Papa, she's lying, and what's more, I told her to turn on the steam and use a press cloth, but she wouldn't listen. But you know how Adrena is." He seemed ready to flare back when he noticed my look of despair.
"All right, Vera, that's enough. If you can salvage this shirt, I'll give you $10.
He smiled at her crookedly. True to her word, that evening when Papa came home, Vera showed him his pink shirt. It looked brand new. He took it from her hands, turned it over and over to look for patch stitches, and could find none.
"I don't believe my eyes,"
he said, and then laughed as he pulled out his wallet. He handed Vera $10.
"Honey, perhaps I've been misjudging you after all."
"I took it to a silk mender, Papa," she said demurely, bowing down her head. "It cost me $15, so that means I lost 5 of my savings." He was listening attentively. If there was one kind of person my Papa admired, it was one who knew how to save.
"Where did you earn the money to save, Vera?"
"I run errands for old people, help by shopping for their groceries," she said in a small, shy voice. "On Saturdays, I walk all the way to the village and do what I said. Sometimes I babysit, too." My mouth gaped. Sure, once in a while Vera disappeared on Saturdays, but it was hard to picture her walking 15 miles to and another 15 fro. Papa was triply impressed and pulled out another 10 and gave that to her.
"Now this shirt cost me 120, but it's better than throwing it away."
He didn't even look at me as he impulsively planted a resounding kiss on her cheek.
"You surprise me, girl. I haven't always been nice to you. I thought you wouldn't care about my ruined shirt. I even thought you didn't love me."
"Oh, Papa," she said with her eyes gleaming. I love you from the top of your hair to the tip of your toenails. I hated her, really hated her for calling him Papa when he was my father, not hers. For some strange reason, he backed away from Vera, glancing down at his shoes as if to check the horny toenails that embarrassed him. He cleared his throat and looked disconcerted.
Well, it's an overdone compliment, but if it's genuine, I'm pleased and touched.
Stunned, I watched him leave the room without once glancing my way. He didn't come in that night to tuck me into bed or kiss my cheek or hear my prayers, and if I dreamed of boys in the woods, I was pretty sure on this night he wouldn't come running to save me. In the morning, it was Vera who poured Papa's coffee, spelling Mama, who seemed wilted and looked very pale. She jumped up to put on 3 slices of toast and stood close to see it didn't toast too long. He liked it golden on the outside, tender on the inside. Vera fried his bacon to perfection, and I didn't hear one complaint from him. When he finished eating, he thanked her for waiting on him, then got up to leave for work. Limping after him, Vera caught hold of his hand. Papa, even though I know you're not my real father, can't we pretend you are? Can't we, Papa? He seemed uncomfortable, as if not knowing what to say, and at the same time, touched. Papa belonged to me and Mama, not to Vera. I glanced at my aunt, who sat tight-lipped and grim, and I wished that both she and Vera would leave and go anywhere away from here. Soon Papa left. I watched as his car turned off the dirt road that would take him onto the expressway and into town, where he'd have lunch with businessmen and call it work. To my surprise, he stopped momentarily at the mailbox on the corner where our private road forked off to meet the main road. I wondered why he hadn't picked up the mail last night. Had he been so eager to reach Mama and see how she'd fared that he'd forgotten again to check the mailbox? When I reached our mailbox, I found the mail was still there. In fact, magazines and newspapers were bulging from the door, which wouldn't close. It took some doing to stack my arms with all that was addressed to Papa. This was just what I needed. I would win Papa back. I knew what he wanted from me. I knew what Papa cared about most. Money. I had to use my gift to make Papa money. Then he'd love me best forever. I was trying to read the front page of the Wall Street Journal even before I reached the kitchen to toss the mail on the table. I raced off to find the items I needed, a pencil and notepad and a length of string and a straight pin. In the closet under the back stairs was all the junk we wanted to keep and later throw out. It was there I found old copies of the journal. I laid out the quote sheets and began to list the most active stocks, thinking 2 weeks should give me a time span enough. Even as I worked, I could hear Vera upstairs arguing with my aunt, who wanted her to help with the laundry. Vera wanted to go to the movies. She was meeting a friend.
No,
yelled my aunt.
You're too young to start dating.
Vera said something else I couldn't make out.
No, no, no,
I could hear very well.
Stop pleading. Once I say no, I mean no. I'm not like some others around here who say no and later change their minds.
You let me do what I want, or I'll spill out all our family secrets in the middle of Main Street, shrilled Vera. I'll stand there until everybody knows who my father is and what you did, and the White Fern name will go even farther down on the list of scoundrels.
Open your mouth about family secrets, and you won't get one dime from me or anyone else. If you behave yourself, there's a chance for us to profit sooner or later. You antagonize Damien and Lucietta. You're a thorn in both their sides, but it can pay off for both of us if you just try to behave yourself. I used to rue the day I conceived you. Many a time I wished I'd have an abortion, but when you had Damien's shirt repaired and I saw how impressed he was, I regained some hope.
Pleading came into her voice.
Adrina doesn't have to be the darling in this family, Vera. Remember, all that's happened to her has given you a certain edge. Take advantage of it. You know how he is and what he needs. Admire him. Respect him. Flatter him, and you'll become his favorite.
There was a long silence up there and some whispering I couldn't hear. That all-too-familiar lead ball came to reside in my chest again. They were plotting against me, and they knew what had happened to me when I didn't. I had almost believed that my aunt liked me. Now I was hearing that she too was my enemy. I went back to the table to work with more determination to find just the right stock that would go up, 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 and make Papa very, very, very rich. I tied my little birthstone ring to the string, figuring I could do the same as Mrs. Alicemore and predict which stock would be a winner. Papa was always saying trading stocks was not a science, but an art, and what I was doing seemed very creative. I'd fastened a pin to the ring with a bit of thread to use it for a pointer. Twice, it touched down on the same stock. I tried to force it to touch a third time. Three of anything was a magic number, but it refused to choose the same stock three times, even when I opened my eyes and tried to control the ring. It seemed to have some power of its own, faltering, indecisive, the same as Mama's wedding ring had been confused over her abdomen. Just then, I heard a loud howl.
"Where are my diamond stud earrings?"
shouted Aunt Elsbeth.
"They're the only things my father left me of value and my mother's own engagement ring. They're gone. Vera, did you steal my jewelry?"
"No," bellowed Vera. "Perhaps you misplaced them like you do everything else."
"It's been years since I wore that ring. You know I keep all my best jewelry locked in a box. Vera, don't lie. You're the only one who ever enters my bedroom. Now where are those things?"
"Why don't you ask Adrina?"
"Her? Don't be ridiculous. That girl would never steal anything. She's got too much conscience. It's you who doesn't have any."
She paused as I began to fold up the newspapers, my stock list put safely away.
"Now I know what you did to restore Damien's $100 pink silk shirt," said my aunt scornfully. "You stole my earrings and ring, hawked them, and bought him a new shirt. Damn you for doing that, Vera! No, you are not going to the movies, not today or any Saturday. Until the day you earn enough money to reclaim my jewelry, you stay home."
I drifted to the bottom of the stairs to hear better. Then I heard a thump, like someone falling. Then Vera came rushing down the stairs with my aunt limping after her.
"When I catch you, you're going to be locked in your room the remainder of this summer."
Vera came flying in her best dress and new white shoes. I stood in her way. Brutally, she shoved me aside and reached the front door before my aunt was down the back stairs.
"Adrina, you can tell that beast of a woman that I hate her as much as I hate you. Your mother, your father, and this house. I'm going to the village, and when I get there, I'm going to sell my body on the streets. I'm going to stand out before Papa's barber shop and yell, 'Get your white fern daughter.' I'll yell it so loud that the men in the city will hear, and they'll all come running, and I'll be the richest one yet."
"You tramp!" yelled my aunt, running through the kitchen and heading for Vera. "You come back here. Don't you dare open that door and leave."
But the door was opened and slammed shut before my aunt ran out to the porch. I stood looking out a window, watching Vera disappear around the bend. The village was 15 miles away. The city was 30. Was she going to hitchhike? My aunt came and stood next to me.
"Please don't tell your father what you overheard here. There are some things better left unsaid."
I nodded, feeling sorry for her. "Can I help?" Stiffly, she shook her head.
"Don't waken your mother. She needs to rest. I'm going upstairs. You'll have to fix your own breakfast."
On Saturdays, Mama liked to sleep late, and that gave my aunt her chance to stay in the little room off the dining room where she kept her television set. She loved to watch old movies and soap operas. They were the only entertainment she had. My appetite had fled with Vera. I didn't doubt in the least that she would do just as she'd threatened. She'd destroy us all. I sat down and tried not to think of what Arden and his mother would think. My mind was a workshop of miserable thoughts, wondering what made Papa the way he was. Lovable and detestable, selfish yet giving. He needed someone nearby at all times, especially to watch him shave, and since Mama had to fix breakfast, it was usually me who perched on the rim of the bathtub and listened to all the interesting things that went on in his brokerage office. I asked many questions about the stock market and what made stocks go up or down.
"Demand,"
was his answer for high flyers.
"Disappointment,"
was his explanation for those that went down.
"Rumors of mergers and takeovers are great for sending stocks soaring,
But by the time the general public knows about those things, it's too late to get in. All the banks and big investors have bought and are ready to sell off to the poor, unknowing investor who buys in at the top. When you've got the right connections, you know what's going on. If you don't have those connections, keep your money in the bank.
Bit by bit, I'd gained a great deal of knowledge about the market. It was Papa's way of teaching me, too, about arithmetic. I didn't think of money in cents, but in eighths of points. I knew about triple tops that were sure to slide and double bottoms that should take off. He showed me charts and how to read them, despite Mama ridiculing him about my being too young to understand.
Nonsense. A young brain is a quick brain. She understands much more than you do.
Oh, yes. In some ways, I loved my father very much, for if he couldn't restore my memory, he did give me hopes for my future. Someday he was going to own his own brokerage firm, and I'd be his manager.
With your gifts, we can't miss,
was the way he put it.
Can't you just see it now, Adrina? DJ Adair and Company.
Once again, I went back to the most active lists and performed my string and ring trick, and again my pinpointer touched down twice on that same stock. Happiness swelled in my heart. I hadn't left it to Providence. Papa was going to make money when I gave him this dream. And if this stock I'd chosen did go up, as by now I was fully expecting it would, then never again would I have to sit in that first and best Adrina's rocking chair. I'd have her gift, or one even better. I knew Papa. It was money Papa wanted, and money he needed, if money was truly the one thing he didn't have enough of. I raced upstairs to dress, sure that soon I'd have my memories back, too. Maybe the string and ring trick would work if I swung it over the Bible. I laughed as I sped on by the first Adrina's bedroom and hurried down to the kitchen, still tying my sash. Mama was up and in the kitchen with blue curlers as fat as tin cans in her hair.
"Adrina," she began in a weary voice, "would you mind watching the bacon while I whip the eggs?"
Dark circles were under her eyes.
"I tossed and turned all night. This baby is unusually restless. Just as I fell asleep toward dawn, your father's alarm went off, and he was up and talking 10 miles a minute, trying to tell me not to worry about what that old woman said. He thinks I'm depressed, not tired. So he decided that he's going to invite 20 people over tonight to a party. Can you imagine anything more ridiculous? Here I am in my 6th month, so tired I can hardly manage to get out of bed, and he thinks I need cheering up by preparing fancy little goodies for his friends. He tells me I'm bored when he's the one who's bored. I wish to God he'd take up golf or tennis or anything that would use up some of his energy and keep him away from home on the weekends.
Oh, oh, now I understood perfectly. Somehow that sixth sense Papa possessed had told him that today I had the gift. That had to be the real reason he wanted to celebrate. 100 or more times he'd told me he'd celebrate with a party on the day my gift came to light. So it was true. I did have the gift now. Otherwise the ring wouldn't have settled twice on the same stock when 9 others were listed there. I felt so good I wanted to shout.
"Where are Elsbeth and Vera?"
asked Mama. I couldn't tell her about the argument and what Vera had threatened to do. Mama's maiden name was her most cherished possession. And if someone had picked Vera up, at this very moment she could be in the village shouting out all our secrets. To think of Vera was to think of reality, and soon my confidence in my gift began to wane. All my life, or so it seemed, Papa had dumped all kinds of junk into my head about the supernatural, which he believed in and Mama didn't. I was convinced what he told me was true when I was with him, and convinced it wasn't true the moment he left the house.
"Where's Elsbeth?"
Mama asked. "She tripped and fell, Mama."
"Cursed,"
murmured Mama, reaching to prod me into turning over the bacon.
"A house of idiots determined to make you and me idiots, too. Adrina, I don't want you to sit in that rocking chair anymore. The only gift your older dead sister had was an extraordinary amount of love and respect for her father, and that's what he misses. She believed every word he said. Every one of his crackpot notions she took seriously. Think for yourself. Don't let him rule you. Just stay out of the woods. Take that warning very seriously."
But Mama, I began uncomfortably, Arden Lowe lives in the gardener's cottage in the woods. He's my only friend. I'd want to die if I couldn't see him often.
I know it's lonely for you without friends your own age, but when the baby comes, you'll have a friend, and you can invite Arden over here. And we'll invite his mother to tea, and we won't let Aunt Mercy Marie sit on the piano.
I ran to hug her, feeling so happy I could have burst.
You like him a lot, don't you?
Yes, Mama. He never tells lies. He never breaks a promise. He isn't so fussy he's afraid to get his hands dirty like Papa. We talk about real things, not like the things Papa talks about so often. He told me once he read somewhere that a coward dies many deaths. He said that once he was so petrified he acted like a coward and he can never forgive himself. Mama, he looks so troubled when he says that. Pity filled her beautiful eyes.
Tell Arden that sometimes it's better to run away and live, to fight another day, for there is such a thing as odds too great.
I wanted to ask what she meant, but she had everything ready now to put on the table, and Papa wasn't home, and my aunt was upstairs, and Vera... Lord only knew what Vera was doing this minute.
Set the table, darling, and stop looking worried. I think Arden is a very noble-sounding name, and he's living up to his name as best he can. Just try to love your father as much as his first daughter did, and he'll stop forcing you into the chair.
Mama, when he comes home, I'm going to tell him to cancel the party.
You can't do that,
she answered dully.
He's driven into town to pick up party food and fresh flowers. As soon as his business meeting is over, he'll be rushing back here. You see, your father never had parties when he was a boy, and now he uses any excuse to make up for that lack. Men stay children at heart, Adrina. Remember that. No matter how old they become, they manage to keep some boy inside them, always wanting what they wanted then, not realizing that when they were boys, they wanted to be manly instead of boyish. It's strange, isn't it? When I was a girl, I wished we'd never have parties, for when we did have them, I wasn't invited and I had to stay upstairs, dying to come down. I'd hide and watch and feel so unwanted. It wasn't until I was 16 that I danced in my own house.
Where did you dance?
We'd roll up the rugs and dance in the Roman Revival room or in the back parlor. Other times, I'd steal out the window and meet a boyfriend who'd drive me to a dance. My mother would leave the back door unlocked so I could sneak back in and my father would never know. She'd come into my room when she heard me return and sit on my bed so I could tell her everything. That's the way it's going to be with us. When you're old enough to go to dances, I'll see that you go.
If my gift didn't set me free, maybe my mother would. Did you have lots of boyfriends, Mama?
Yes, I guess I did.
Wistfully, she stared over my head.
I used to promise myself I wouldn't marry until I was 30. I wanted my musical career more than I wanted a husband and children. And look what I got.
I'm sorry, Mama. Then she was touching my hair lightly.
Darling, I'm sorry. I'm talking too much and making you feel guilty when it was I who made the choice. I fell in love with your father, and love has a way of brushing aside all other considerations. He swept me off my feet, and if he hadn't, I would probably have died of a broken heart anyway. But you be careful not to let love steal what aspirations you have for yourself. Though your father fills your head with silly ideas, in one he's perfectly right. You are special. You're gifted, too, even if you don't know what that gift is. Your father is a good man who just doesn't always do the right thing.
I stared up into her face, feeling more and more confused. First she said Papa gave me idiotic notions, and then she told me his craziest one about my being special was true. Moments later, Papa was home with his sacks of groceries and florist flowers. Vera came straggling after him. She looked dirty. Her hair was a mess, and she'd been crying.
Mama,
she sobbed, running to my mother and making me feel mean again because she was trying to claim not only my father, but also my mother.
Papa pulled me into his car by my hair. Look what he did to my hair, and I just said it last night.
Don't comfort her, Lucky,
shouted Papa when he saw my mother's arms go protectively about Vera. He grabbed hold of Vera and shoved her into a kitchen chair so forcefully that she began to wail.
That smart mouth was stumbling along the highway when I saw her. When I stopped and ordered her into the car, she told me she was going to become a whore and shame us all. Elsbeth, if you don't know how to tame your daughter, then I'll use my own method.
I hadn't even noticed my aunt had slipped into the kitchen, wearing one of her plaid cotton house dresses that seemed so cheap and ordinary compared to the pretty clothes my mother wore.
Vera, go upstairs and stay there until I tell you to come down again,
barked Papa.
And no meals until you can apologize to all of us. You should be grateful you have a place at all in this household.
I'll go, but I'll never be grateful.
Vera picked herself up and trudged out of the kitchen.
And I'll come downstairs when I get good and ready.
Papa rushed forward. Mama, don't let him whip her, I cried. She'll only do something to hurt herself if he does. Vera always caused her own accidents soon after she had enraged Papa so much he had to punish her. My mother sighed and looked more fatigued.
Yes, I guess you're right. Damien, let her go. She's been punished enough.
Why didn't my aunt speak up to defend her own daughter? Sometimes it seemed she disliked Vera as much as Papa did. Then I filled with guilt. At times, I too absolutely hated Vera. The only time I liked her was when I pitied her. Upstairs, Vera was screaming at the top of her lungs.
Nobody loves me. Nobody cares. Don't you dare ever hit me again, Damien Adair. If you do, I'll tell. You know who I'll tell, and you'll be sorry. You will be.
In a flash, Papa was out of the chair and flying up the stairs. That stupid Vera kept right on screaming until he threw open her door, and then there was a thud. Next came the loudest and longest howl I'd heard her make yet, and her lifetime had a long record of howls and screams. My blood chilled. Another loud thump, and then total silence. All three of us left in the kitchen stared up at the ceiling, which was the floor of Vera's room. What had Papa done to Vera? A few minutes later, Papa came back to the kitchen.
What did you do to Vera?
Asked Mama sharply, her eyes hard as she glared at him.
She's only a child, Damien. You don't have to be so harsh with a child.
I didn't do a damn thing,
he roared.
I opened the door of her room. She backed off and tripped over a chair. She fell and started howling. She got up and started to run to hide in the closet where she put that lock on the inside, and darn if she didn't trip and fall again. I left her on the floor crying. You'd better go up, Ellie. She may have broken another bone.
Disbelievingly, I stared at Papa. If I had fallen, he'd have run to help me up. He'd have kissed me, held me, said 100 loving things, and yet he did nothing for Vera but walk away. And only yesterday he'd been so nice to her. I looked at my aunt, almost holding my breath, wondering what she would do to Papa for being so heartless.
After breakfast, I'll go up,
answered my aunt, as she sat down again.
Another broken bone would spoil my appetite.
Mama rose to go upstairs and see to Vera.
Don't you dare,
ordered Papa.
You look tired enough to faint, and I want you well rested and pretty for the party tonight.
Shaken again, I got up and started for the stairs. Papa ordered me back, but I continued on, taking the steps three at a time. I'm coming, Vera, I called. Vera wasn't in her room lying on the floor with broken bones as I thought she'd be. I ran about wondering where she could be. Then, to my utter amazement, I heard her singing in the first Adrina's bedroom.
Only a playroom, safe in my home. Got no tears, no fears. And nowhere else to roam, 'cause my papa wants me always to stay home, safe in my playroom, safe in my home.
I thought I'd never heard such a pitiful tune, the sad way she sang it, as if she'd sell her soul to the devil to be me, and to be forced to sit in the chair I despised. Reluctantly, I returned to the kitchen again, where an inexplicably jovial Papa was telling a grouchy Mama a party was indeed just the thing she needed to lift her spirits.
How's Vera?
Mama asked. I told her Vera was fine and not broken, though I didn't mention she was using the rocking chair and must have stolen that key from Papa's key ring.
Didn't I tell you?
Said Papa.
Lucky, as soon as Adrina finishes her brunch, the two of us are taking a stroll down to the river.
He stood, and it seemed he deliberately tossed his linen napkin so it fell into his half-full coffee cup. Mama plucked his napkin from the cup and gave him an expressive, "You have again proved yourself a slob," stare. But she didn't dare to reprimand him. It wouldn't have done any good. Papa did as he wanted and always would. He led me by the hand to our back lawn, which gradually descended to the river. Its sparkling ripples made the day seem wondrously fine. He smiled at me and said,
"Tomorrow's your 9th birthday, darling."
"Papa," I cried, staring at him, "how can tomorrow be my 9th birthday when I'm only 7 today?" Momentarily, he seemed at a loss for words. As always, when he lacked ready explanations, he caressed my hair, then lightly rubbed his curled fingers over my cheeks.
"My sweet, haven't I told you many times that's why we don't send you to school? You are one of those rare individuals who has no sense of time at all."
He spoke precisely, looking directly into my eyes as if to engrave his information.
"We don't celebrate birthdays in our house because somehow it confuses your own special calendar. 2 years ago, or one day short, you were 7 years old."
What he said was impossible. Why hadn't he told me that I was 8 years old and not 7? Was he deliberately trying to make me crazy? I put my hands over my ears to shut out anything else he had to say. My eyelids squeezed tightly together as I racked my brain to remember someone telling me I was 8 years old. I couldn't remember anyone mentioning any age but 7.
"Adrina, honey, don't look so panicked. Don't try to remember. Just trust what Papa tells you. Tomorrow is your 9th birthday. Papa loves you, Mama loves you, and even shrew-tongue Ellie loves you if she'd dare to admit it. She can't because Vera is there and Vera envies you. Vera could love you too if I showed her more affection. I'm going to try, really try to like that girl just so you won't have an enemy living in your own home."
I swallowed, feeling a sore throat coming on and tears filling my eyes. Something was weird about my life. No matter how many times Papa told me about my specialness, it wasn't natural to forget an entire year. It just couldn't be natural. I'd ask Arden, but then he'd know something awful was wrong with me and he wouldn't like me either. So it seemed I'd have to believe Papa. I told myself that I was only a child, and what difference did it make if I lost just 1 year in the process of growing up? And if time skipped past quicker than I could keep track of, what difference did it really make? Sometimes unconscious fears tried to sneak out, whispering slyly, disturbing me, threatening my tentative acceptance. Inside my brain, colors were flashing, and I felt the rocking motion of my body to and fro, singing voices whispering to me of birthday parties when I had been 8 years old and I'd worn a white dress with ruffles tied around with a violet satin sash. But what did rocking chair dreams mean, except that the first and best Adrina had worn a ruffled white dress to her party? All those visions of birthday parties were her parties. Where could I go to find the truth? Who was there who was totally honest with me? There was no one who would tell me the truth because I might be hurt if they did. Papa drew me down on the grassy slope beside him. The sun was high overhead and burning hot through my hair as I sat on and on with Papa. Every word he said washed clear images from my brain and replaced them with smeary blots. I watched the geese and the ducks that were using unseen paddle feet to swim like mad to where Mama liked to feed them. They had a fondness for eating her tulips and daffodils in the spring.
"Let's talk about what you dreamed last night,"
Papa said after we had been silent for a long time.
"Last night I heard you moaning and groaning, and when I went to check on you, you were tossing in your bed, mumbling incoherently in your sleep."
Feeling panicky, I looked around to see a red-headed woodpecker working on one of our best old hickory trees. "Go away," I cried. "Eat the worms on the camellia bushes."
"Adrina,"
said Papa impatiently,
"forget about the trees. The trees will be here long after you and I have come and gone. Tell me what you saw in the rocking chair."
If Papa believed in Mrs. Alice Moore's string and ring trick, it seemed only right that I could use the same method to please him. I was about to speak and tell him when I felt the hackles on my neck rise. Turning my head quickly, I glimpsed Vera in the room where the rocking chair was. Still up there, still rocking. Let her rock on and on forever.
There was no gift but the one imagination concocted to please somebody who wanted magic in his life. And maybe in the long run, imagination was a special gift.
Okay, darling. I'm not going to plead further. Just tell me what you dreamed last night.
I spoke the name of the stock my pin had touched on twice, and then twice again. Papa looked incredulous, then angry. Immediately from his reaction,